This movie is an underheld gem, and I'm glad we're all gathered here today to discuss that.
Well, Don's already gave his quick thumbs up, thumbs down, so we can skip him later.
We can skip him later. Good, excellent. Yeah. Hello, everybody, and welcome again to the Good Trash Genre Cast.
We were going
to
do a hot mics kind of fun cold open thing, and just... Cut me out on that one.
Yeah.
Sons of bitches.
It's all right. Well, welcome again to the Good Trash Undercast. We gather on a table. We discuss the films you'll never discuss in a film size course. Now we're looking at the 90s gem, perhaps. Sam Raimi's The Quick and the Dead. We're going to have a great time talking about this film. Let's identify the disembodied voices speaking to your minds. Who are you to my left, sir?
I am Arthur Gordon, and I'm so danged fast that I can wake up at the crack of dawn, rob two banks, a train, and a stagecoach, shoot the tail feathers off a duck's butt at 300 feet, and still be back in bed before you wake up next to me, Dustin.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you very much for that, Mr. Arthur Gordon. Who are you, sir?
My name is Dalton Stewart, and no, there is not a single man in this fictional town that I'm not interested in.
Very good, very good. My name is Dustin Sells, and if you'd let me die, I might have gone to heaven. And,
oh, no.
No.
Oh, no.
What have you done? So here we are to discuss the Pale Rider. I mean, not the Pale Rider. I mean, I don't know.
What do you mean?
There's some Venging Angel stuff going on here, I'm just saying.
Yeah, okay, fair point.
Lots of that. So we're going to talk about this film. If you're tuning in for the very first time to the Good Trash Genre Cast.
Oh, you've come in and joined us at an exciting time, new listener.
It's fun, but this is not a review show. It's an analysis show, and that does mean we will spoil this film if you have not seen it. And what we'll do, though, to give you a reprieve from that, if you want to get a taste of what we're about, we'll do a synopsis from the film, which will, of course, be spoiler-free. We'll do thumbs-up, thumbs-down reviews, avoiding spoilers as best we can. We'll play a game which might involve the mildest, I think, perhaps.
This will be a spoilery game episode, I think.
I think there'll be some mild spoilage going on with the game. And then we'll get down to business, which is analysis, and then that's when all spoiler bets are off. So that is your warning. Without any further ado, Dr. Arthur Gordon, let's hear that synopsis, please.
A female gunfighter returns to a frontier town where a dueling tournament is being held, which she enters in an effort to avenge her father's death.
There you go.
Bum, bum, bum.
All right, look, I know I've already jumped in here and declared where I stand, but I'm curious now.
We have rules for a reason.
There are no rules here. Everything is made up. We've come here towards the tail end of this very, very big Western marathon we've been doing since the start of January. How do you guys feel that this sits in the canon of these Westerns we've been doing, both kind of at large and specifically in the Good Trash Westerns we've done?
With the exception of Buster Scruggs, this is the most meta of the Westerns. It is Western with all caps, it seems to me, and is definitely playing with the tropes as a joke, as something of a gag, and is, again, like this sort of cinephilic kind of dialogue with style stuff that you might find in like these Italian spaghetti westerns.
Yeah, and even from just a basic standpoint of the narrative, I think you have a lot of those recognizing elements. The quest for revenge at the heart is very Western, that coupled with all those kind of absurdist approaches to the tropes of the genre as well, I think kind of landed in that Good Trash, especially the kind of absurdity of it landed, I think, in that Good Trash realm.
It's interesting, yeah. I agree with you, Arthur. I think all of those flourishes that are very much Sam Raimi touches, I think they do push it into that Good Trash realm. But Dustin, I think you're right, too, that it's interesting that the next most meta Western we watched is Buster Scruggs, which we kind of situated in that anti-trash category. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that here at the end of this Good Trash section of the Western Marathon, we get this this thing that seems to be operating in a similar way.
Yeah, it's like a bookend in that kind of sense. And this one is much more stylistically. It's doing much more the Sergio Leone kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, or Django. Not Django Unchained, but Django the original series, which we did talk about on the show way back when.
Mm-hmm.
It does definitely feel like it is a conversation piece with other Westerns in ways that, say, Tombstone really was not.
I would agree with that. And I think to say Cowboys and Aliens is not its own thing entirely would be disingenuous.
Right.
All right. I was just curious where you guys stood. Arthur, what do you feel about this? How do you like it? What works? What doesn't? How's it sit for you?
Who does he think he is?
He's just, I'm fired.
I guess so. It's the Dalton Stewart show now.
I've been eliminated. I was eliminated in the first round, so I don't get to keep fighting.
How do you spell that?
I was out of things to say, and I wanted to make it clear, I guess.
You spell it correctly.
That's a good line.
That is a very good line.
I like this movie quite a bit. I watched it for the first time, actually, just a few months ago, last year, probably around mid-year or so. For the first time, I think it was around the time we did Spider-Man, actually, because I was wanting to watch some more Raimi stuff, and so this is one that was streaming at the time, and I caught up with it. And I had a great time with it then, and I still have a great time with it. I think it is just a lot of fun. Those over-the-top, almost cartoonish flourishes that he incorporates here, kind of going back to the zoom in on the eyes multiple times, just very over-the-top. A lot of those kind of Dutch angles that he uses, Raimi uses to shoot in some of that, the clock tower and everything that kind of goes on there, and just the overemphasization on the sound editing.
The sound design of that click that the clock tower does before it strikes the hour. Yeah, it's great. Touch.
That, but even like there's a moment where I think Herod walks in and then Ace looks up and it's just so creaky. Like his leather outfit is just so creaky when he looks up and over. And just those kind of little over-the-top nuanced moments are just so much fun. And Raimi seems to be having a blast. And I think everyone, you know, is doing a great job here, especially Hackman and Russell Crowe. Leo's a lot of fun here in that very young role. Lance Henriksen's great. Tobin Bell.
Yeah.
How about some
good
Tobin
time.
Bell? Yeah.
Fun cameo from him.
The old man from Home Alone. I mean, it's just a stacked who's who of those kind of fun character actors. And so it's a great time. Sharon Stone's pretty good. I don't know how in love with her I am. I think she's pretty solid, though.
Oh, I'm totally in love with her.
Yeah, I'm over the moon. We'll discuss here in a moment.
I mean, in this movie, maybe not, but I'm in love with Sharon Stone.
In general, yeah. But in this performance, it's pretty...
No, this performance does it all for me.
Okay.
We'll talk about
it. There you go. But yeah, it's just a blast and playing with all those archetypes and all of those tropes. And, you know, I don't know. This was pretty not well received when it came out, which is kind of funny. But I think, you know, time has given us some chances. And Tombstone was the same way. Tombstone wasn't really well received either when it was released. But, you know, time is kind to these two movies, I think. Probably more so to Tombstone, which I think is a bit more recognized. But when I saw this, I really didn't know what to expect. But playing with this kind of sports movie idea inside of a Western is just
such a good
blast.
Idea.
Yeah. And just the whole absurdity of the whole thing, the way it's shot, the way it all comes together. If you're, you know, familiar with the genre at all, I think you're going to have a good time with this one. And I did. And I think it is rock solid as a movie. And sad it took so long to catch up with it, but I'm glad I finally caught up with it. And yeah, I'm definitely thumbs up on this one.
Yeah. Well, Dalton, what do you say? Your thumbs up, thumbs down review.
I'm so glad you like this movie, Arthur. This is a film that holds a special place in my heart. My younger sister and I watched this all the time growing up. If ever there was an episode of the show she was going to be on, it was going to be this one. So her and I are both busy right now. But yeah, I love this movie. I adore this film, and it was fun to revisit it for the show. It's a film that I've been wanting to do for a long time, and when we decided we were going to do a good trash component of this Western marathon, it was one that I was extremely excited to discuss. You're right, Arthur. It was not super well received at the time. I wanted to read this little bit from the end of Roger Ebert's review, just kind of talking about Hackman's performance versus Stone's. As preposterous as the plot was, there was never a line of dialogue Hackman from... Oh, this is a typo out of there. Huh. There was never a line of dialogue Hackman didn't sound as if he believed. The same can't be said, alas, for Sharon Stone, who apparently believed that if she played her character as silent, still, and passive and mysterious, we would find that interesting. More swagger might have helped. Do you suppose she took the plot seriously? And I gotta say, I disagree with Ebert on there. I think Stone's performance has a lot of like really interesting vulnerability. I think there is a rage and a pathos to that character that is really palpable, but also I think she's playing it like she's a little in out of her depth. And I think it's a really great performance. So it's interesting to me to see that, because I feel like it speaks to somebody who just doesn't get what this movie's going for.
Yeah, because I think she's definitely playing at tough. I don't think she is
exactly
as tough as she puts on, and I think that's an interesting nuance.
It's
yeah.
a performance, yeah.
And it's also the only performance in the film that really has any kind of grounded through line. Everybody else is really
Crow maybe back and forth.
I would think. Say Crow's yeah, Crow. Got this kind of preacher death dealer archetype thing going on, right? This yeah. reformed killer of men. The kid, yeah, has got this whole cocksure, trying to prove himself thing. Herod's just pure evil.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Arthur. I think the lady, I think Ellen is her name. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really get it one time. I think she is the much more, if not the only, nuanced performance or character, for that matter, in the film. And again, I think it just speaks to not getting what this is going for, because as you mentioned, Arthur, it's kind of got this Saturday morning cartoon comic book Western sensibility, this kind of heightened look at what the West is. And I like that it's kind of removed from reality a little bit. It's one of the films we've discussed this marathon that is most eschewed what the West probably was actually like living in it.
Yeah. I think the other thing I think that time has given us is we kind of look at this as a Raimi film. But at the time, it was a Sharon Stone film. I mean, she handpicked Raimi, she handpicked Crow, she handpicked DiCaprio for this. And so it was very much a kind of Sharon Stone production. And it was Sony, I think.
TriStar.
Yeah, they kind of were a bit frustrated with the decision she was making. But it's very much her movie. And I think, you know, looking at it in that light can kind of change your perspective as to looking at it now is like, it's a very Raimi film.
I think it's interesting, though, the way that she shares authorship, though, because she's the one that gets this movie made, right?
Yeah.
And
definitely.
That's super interesting.
I mean, she pays DiCaprio's salary to get him in this movie.
And I think I remember seeing something about Raimi paying somebody's salary or letting his part of his salary go to something as well. So it's interesting how much passion went into this film and getting it made. The screenwriter, I was reading a little bit about it. I don't have his name in front of me, but I guess they tried to Google once over on his script because he was actively trying to invoke some of those spaghetti Western sensibilities, and they tried to make it a much more conventional Western and then just threw that draft out.
I also think it's also really cool that Sharon Stone had that clout to be able to do. I mean, you don't hear of a lot of women who have the pull like that, the star power to do
Basic
that.
Instinct. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's kind of on top of Hollywood.
Sharon Stone was a big deal in the early 90s. And today, I don't really see you get a woman getting this kind of power to make a movie like this,
other than
Kathleen Kennedy.
I think we're getting there. I think Chastain, when we get to our game and discuss our potential recasting of this film for modern consumption, I think we might talk about some actresses that might have the pull to make this film happen. I just want to close briefly with something that was written by a critic and Raimi biographer Bill Warren. He wrote that the film's very conscious, though not self-conscious, attempt to recreate some of the theme, style, and appeal of Sergio Leone's majestically operatic spaghetti westerns of the 60s, especially the Man with No Name trilogy that starred Clint Eastwood. It's brisker, more romantic, and somehow more American than Leone's movies. I would agree with that. I think it's got...
How do you mean somehow more American? We have an American film. What?
I think the argument being, this sounds like somebody that comes from the school that when another country tackles a movie, it's going to get it a little bit more right. But I would agree. I think Raimi's film has kind of a Midwestern oddball sensibility that really kind of is needed for the Western sometimes. So, I think it's great. I think it's an unsung masterpiece of the 90s, and I would say even more so than Tombstone, it is the example of the 90s Western.
Very good, very good. I like the movie a lot myself. It's Evil Dead the Western, Evil Dead the style applied to the Western. And, I mean, again, it's very, very much style is in front of you. Again, if Western is in all caps, so is the word style. And although, yes, it does, those extreme close-ups and whatnot that Leone uses in his Dollars trilogy are definitely being deployed here. It feels very just Raimi. It just feels like Sam Raimi's just doing his Sam Raimiest things, right? And that's not a bad thing. You know, I would have liked for some spider cameos, but whatever. That's what my son kept asking for. Also, his first response when he saw DiCaprio was like, oh, wow, he could be playing Ellen's sister, which was very funny. But anyway, so he was not, he's like, oh, this is like teenage.
He was not impressed, was he?
He was not impressed. And I'm kind of, like, I think it's fun. It is absolutely a fun, cartoonish, you know, all that stuff.
You're
but
breaking my heart.
I'm with Ebert. It is ridiculous. It is absolute.
Oh, definitely.
And I don't.
Yeah, that's
I
a,
think
that's
it's supposed
a,
to be, though.
It's a feature, not a bug.
You've got to earn it. And it doesn't.
Wrong. There's a moment where Court is sitting on the steps of the saloon telling his backstory to Sharon Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see Herod Jackman is just standing in the doorway of the saloon on the other side of the swinging doors. She's just there for a while. And the movie just kind of lets him loom over this conversation as this dark figure. And then he enters when Court, like, is about to say, this is where Herod left me. And Herod enters and explains their whole backstory.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great moment. And I think it's a moment where the film absolutely earns this tone with its big comic flourishes and overtures.
See, that moment is serious. It feels like a very, very serious kind of Western.
But it's serious in a way that is very kind of turned up to 11. You know what I mean?
It's
melodramatic.
But you have that, and then you have Spotted Horse can't be killed by a bullet when, like, the one gag of the extra hand coming up every shot in the forehead.
Part of melodrama is camp.
Oh, okay.
Part of melodrama is camp.
Not necessarily. Mm. And again, I'm going to...
Maybe I would say part of camp is melodrama.
I mean, I like Twin Peaks, okay? So I like your weird mixed with your serious.
Yeah, I know.
I'm okay with that. But it feels like somehow I needed the whiplash to either be stronger or subtler. And it was just too mealy-mouthed about that for me. And that's all I want to say. It's not bad. Don't get me wrong. And it's a lot of fun. But at the same time, it's a little bit ridiculous. For instance, the gun holes that you see daylight through. Now, I love the daylight gun hole in the hat. I love that.
You're right. Maybe gun hole light through the noggin is a bit much.
It's a bit much. Yes.
I can agree with that.
And also Herod's chest, right? I was like, oh, come on.
Okay. All right.
And again, spoiler, sorry.
It's fine.
Nonetheless.
What are you
this movie's do? Over 20 years old. We'll be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fine.
So, I mean, again, I'm okay with that being a thing, but not in a movie that's sort of set up with some semblance of realism. And then the suddenness of the climax, that there's a question that's asked about a certain product, and then all of a sudden, it just happens. And there she is. And I'm like, what? It does not earn its resurrection. That's what I want to say.
Well, okay.
So, that being said, though, I had fun. I mean, I still have fun. I'd watch it again next week. Maybe, you know, I got a 7-day cooling period.
All right, next week on the Johnny Cast, we're going to revisit The Quick and the Dead to see if Dustin changes his tune.
to be
on the right side of the line.
Be on the right side of history,
not
Dustin.
Not coming back. There you go. So that's our thoughts on the film, pro and con. Let's go ahead and hear some social media things from Dalton.
Yeah, it's that time for the part of the show where we remind you that this is an ad-free show. So instead of getting commercials about mattresses and teeth brushes that you're never going to buy, you can listen to me talk about other stuff that you can do to further enjoy what the good trash genre cast is putting out into the universe for your ears. We've just recently, within this last 2 weeks, had two new shows premiere on the network. Very exciting debuts. We've got Arthur, our very own founding father, Arthur Gordon. Arthur's doing some very fun pointing to the fences here in the studio. Him and his wonderful wife, Keisha, who have us into their home to record every single week, are doing a show called You've Got Love, where they discuss romantic comedies and how they relate to relationships. Very cool stuff. And then Oklahoma City comedy legend Wampus Reynolds has started a show called A Loose Five, where they break down late night sets. Right now they're focusing on Andy Kindler Letterman, like 2014. His most recent episode 2, had Alex Sanchez from The Praise Down with Heath and Alex, another good trash media show that's been with us for a while now. I think over a year at this point. That sounds right. So again, lots of great stuff, fun shows. Dustin's working on stuff with his kids. Right now I'm the only one without a side hustle. I'm really asleep at the wheel. But I've decided I've planted my flag in it. This is it, guys. 2019, you're the cowboy. This is it. The show is doing something. I don't know. I'm trying to give a rousing, inspirational speech.
And if you want less of Dalton and more mattress commercials, just tell your friends about the Good Trash Genre Cast.
That's right. Go to patreon.com/GTM if you want this section of the show to be shorter. And you can give us money to get access to our bonus content like Good Trash Nights, where we get wild and talk about things that are not the movies that were assigned homework. So again, goodtrashmedia.com for all of those fun podcasts we were talking about. Also, all the archives of all the other shows we've done, all the written content, Twitter, good_trash. There's a listener group on Facebook. That's it. We're done. Oh, do the subscribey thing. Yeah, and the reviewing and the rating. You know the deal.
Bingo.
All right, well, there you go. I think now it's time to play the game. It might feel good, it might sound a little something, but damn the game if it don't mean nothing. What is game? Who got game? Where's the game in life? Behind the game, I got game. She's got game. That's right, and we're back with this week's game, which is a recast of The Quick and the Dead.
That's right, recasting The Quick and the Dead, brought to you by The Quick and the Dead. It's like 25 years old now. Time to put some new actors in here and see what it looks like.
That's the Hollywood thing to do.
Yep, give us $1 million. We're about to cast the movie for you. You guys got your casting director hats on?
Not with $1 million, I don't.
No.
We're gonna need a lot more than
yeah,
a
we're gonna need a lot more money.
Yeah, a dollar.
We're
or
gonna
two
need some
more.
Avengers money for some of these people, probably.
Okay, yeah, give us a big pile of scratch.
Ooh. Yes. So we're gonna move on. I think the number first character is obviously going to be the lady.
We gotta cast the lady.
So Sharon Stone's character, also known as Ellen, although weirdly enough, Court at one point calls her Ellen. Do we know? Does she tell? Is it ever revealed? Sure. Is there an error
maybe
in the
in
script?
Well, there may have been. I know there were some scenes cut, so there may have been something there.
I
there was
like
a sex scene cut between her and Court, I believe, at one point.
Oh, wow.
That they just like, man, this isn't necessary, so they cut it.
That's
but it's in the international release, I think.
I believe I heard that as well, Arthur.
Nifty.
Yeah. But yeah, this is an important place to start. I'm going to go ahead and start off and say Sharon Stone could still do it.
Yeah.
I don't think she has the pull she once did, but I say she's still got the chops for it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Introduces something kind of. I just wanted to mention that one off to start us off.
Yeah,
but, you know, we're squarely in the age of the old man action movie, and I think we've got to move to the older woman action movie.
We're kind of doing that with the Linda Hamilton resurrection and Terminator,
right.
And
bingo.
There's another one I think too, right this year.
Terminator's the only one that comes to mind.
I thought there was somebody else getting one this year.
I certainly hope so.
Well, yeah, even someone like Laura Dern could come back,
yeah.
like your Sharon Stone there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We've got Michelle Pfeiffer entering the MCU in this most recent Ant-Man movie. Yeah, it's time.
So you could definitely do that whole, you could really play up that You Ruined My Life angle with that character if you did cast someone like a current day Sharon Stone. I was going to throw out either Emily Blunt, you mentioned her earlier, Jessica Chastain.
Yeah.
Those would be my pick, I think.
I think they would both really bring the intensity to this role.
I think a lot of Looper when I think of Emily Blunt, and I think that kind of hardened performance would work really well here, and she's just so good. In anything she does. So that's what I was going to go with.
See, I was going to go Jennifer Lawrence. I think, you know, as far as like recreating some of that Sharon Stone kind of feel, and she's just a brilliant actress. She's just able to, you know, whatever is given to her, I think she's able to do something with. And
yeah, that's fair.
I think a better opportunity at an action franchise than she had with The Hunger Games would be great.
I really see Charlize Theron as like the pinnacle.
That's
of,
a good one.
Yeah.
The pinnacle of female action actors right now. So I think she could really do it. The one character, one actor that I thought of that I think might be interesting to really do something different with this character is Ellen Page. Because, again, I think the vulnerability that Sharon Stone brings, but also the determination, I think Ellen Page has got that in strides. And I think just letting the character be out to queer the sexuality of that character, I think would be just an interesting movie because of the nature of sexuality in a movie like this, in a kind of heavily like sexy action movie.
The other name that came to mind for me was Kerry Washington.
Oh man.
Maybe because of Django. But I think of Kerry Washington. I think she can carry it.
I think maybe it's my excitement about Us, but Lupita Nyong'o was one of the actresses that I thought about as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think we've got some great traction on the lady. Let's move on to Herod. I think this is a big one. We've got to get her foil. Who's the villain of this piece?
My pick would kind of play that intertextuality thing, kind of like a Sharon Stone. I would cast Russell Crowe as Herod.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that adds so many layers to that performance.
You know who I've got that's kind of similar to that?
Who?
Brolin. Josh Brolin. I think has got a similar Russell Crowe energy. Yeah.
Well, he does that kind of Sicario thing. Like, if you have that kind of character here, that kind of weaselly, and you're not quite sure what he's about.
Well, see,
a guy that seems too slick to be how tough he is, right?
Yeah.
I think, Brolin's got that in spades.
Oh, yeah.
See, and I want somebody who's been doing a Clint Eastwood impersonation for the last 20 years. I want Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he can play the charmer, and he can do that whole bit.
And both end, yeah.
Yep, he's got the range there.
I also thought about, for somebody that's kind of been doing the old guy action thing for a while, I thought Liam Neeson. I think Neeson is about to enter the villain phase
of
his career
too,
between Widows and trying to say something that I think was actually important in the media, but doing it in a way that was very fucking stupid.
Yeah.
I think it's time.
Yeah.
It's time for his heel turn. Neeson's got to go be represent evil.
And he can do it so well. He can do it so well.
He's great. I mean, we've just watched Ballad of Buster Scruggs not that long ago and saw him in Meal Ticket. Yeah. I give me villainous Neeson.
But guys, what about Denzel?
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Denzel
okay.
is Herod. I mean,
I could. Okay.
Yeah.
I could get behind
that.
Yeah, that's something interesting.
Yeah, and then I've got a female Herod also in mind.
Okay.
Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, fuck, yeah, I like that a lot.
You know.
I thought of actually was thinking Sharon Stone as a female Herod. Kind of that same idea.
Oh,
gotcha,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I want to move on to Dad, the Marshal, played by Gary Sinise, because I think, I don't know if you guys worked on this character, but I did, because I think it's a big scene.
I have one pick, but that's it.
It's kind of the scene of the movie for me. because it kind of is the emotional crux of the feature. One of my first picks is a Scoot McNairy. I think Scoot McNairy's kind of got that tragedy in his face, and I think he plays really big-hearted characters who can't win, especially just watching this third season of True Detective. I'm thinking about him in that kind of capacity a lot, so he's my first pick.
Well, I saw a clip. I haven't seen the season yet, but I saw a clip from the season. I'd maybe go with John Barenthal.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I've got Barenthal somewhere else on this list.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
I like Barenthal because he's got the range. He always kind of plays this kind of obnoxious, tough guy kind of thing. But I saw a clip from he's in the hospital in Punisher, I guess. It was a trailer, so I saw it on Facebook, and he's doing a really emotional thing. He's, I think, relating a story about his family.
Gotcha.
And I think he can play that very well.
I think you're absolutely right.
I went a little older, but I went with Kevin Costner.
I like that. Okay. You know, that is dad. Older, but I like that.
That's good.
I think it'd work, and it just sort of came to me as we were talking about. I think Larry Fishburne would be a great dad character, especially if you had Kerry Washington. Switch, yeah.
I went for Mahershala Ali for my pairing with Lupita Nyong'o. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, I just Mahershala Ali as like a lawman on the prairie just makes so much sense to me. As again, especially the True Detective season 3. My only other pick was John Hamm. I think he's got that I promise everything's going to be okay. You can see that coming from him.
I don't know. I want Hamm to play Herod.
Damn. Yep. Okay.
He'd be a good.
You
Herod.
Changed my mind. Ham for Herod.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on to
Ham for Herod. 2020. Ham for Herod.
Let's move on to Court, the preacher.
Yeah. Who you guys a got? Tough role.
I'm.
I got John David Washington.
Hell yes.
That's who I got. Pick. Maybe.
You need somebody that's a believable killer of men, right?
Right.
And this film would be an update to a '90s classic. You got to get Keanu Reeves. You make Court a little bit older. Court is going to be closer in age
weary.
To Herod. Yeah.
Yeah.
But still a different temperature on that former killer preacher character.
See, I was thinking more of a believable man of God than the believer than the believable killer, and that would be like an Ethan Hawke.
Oh, I like that. See, for me, I thinking about that neck of the woods, I went with John Cho.
Okay.
But I can see Cho like going to that dark place once he has to, but I see him very much as the penitent preacher, which is also why I thought of John Barenthal, because I agree, Arthur. I think he's another actor who I think will be able to turn that switch on so aggressively that him going killer after being penitent, the whole movie will be like... The moment of getting the 38 long cold is not a moment of panic. It is a moment of like steely-eyed, like death dealing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's I'm glad we kind of all went similar places with Court, but different directions at the same time. Does anybody else have any other thoughts before we move on?
No.
I don't think so.
Well, we got to move on to the kid then. This one's hard. I'm not up on the youth.
It's Tom Holland.
It is Tom Holland, exactly.
It is Tom
God
Holland.
God damn it, you guys are so right.
Definitely.
It's Tom Holland,
This
for
is the
sure.
first thing I thought of when you pitched this.
Yeah, I totally agree.
It was the first person I cast.
I went with Cole Sprouse from Riverdale. I want Jughead. I want Jughead as the kid.
Frankenstein.
Scuba
Catch
Steve.
Up.
Scuba Steve.
Scuba Steve.
I also went with a couple of gender flips for the kid. What about Taissa Famiga?
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I can do that.
I also went with Brianna Hildebrand from Deadpool. I think if you're going to queer the lady sexuality, you've got to do the same with the kid. So I think Brianna Hildebrand would be really interesting.
She's a little older, but I'd go with Jessica Roth.
Yeah.
Jessica Roth would be good, too. Yeah. She's so good in the Happy Death Day movies.
Is.
But coming back to your earlier suggestion for a lady, I think maybe Ellen Page would do very well in a kid role
I think Ellen Page is at the phase of her career to do the lady. I mean, she's the same age as me. Ellen Page is like in her
30s. I was
going to
say, Jessica Roth is my age.
Yeah.
Maybe a year younger. So, I mean.
And that's kind of why I went with Brianna Hildebrand. I think doing the kid.
Is that.
If you make it a daughter.
Negasonic, right?
Yeah, Negasonic Teenage Warhead. Okay. Yeah. If you have a. I think the father daughter relationship is more interesting if you kind of lean into the rage, maybe, than
more
the
adolescence.
More the fuck you, I don't need you, than the please accept me, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that. Just what she's done in those Deadpool movies, I think you can see her ability to do that in this role. So that's who I've got for the kid. Do we have any other takers?
Tom Holland, I kind of want RDJ as Herod.
Oh, Robert Downey Jr.'s Herod would be really good.
Yeah, that'd be good.
All out. I don't think we've ever seen him really do a villain thing.
I would love to see that.
I think
that's what he's got to do after the MCU, right?
Yeah, shake it up a little bit.
He's got to go be a villain.
Yeah.
Well, I feel satisfied with this casting.
Yeah, this is fun.
Yeah.
That's a good time.
This is a good way.
Hollywood, we're good at this.
Put us in, coaches.
Give me a chance, coach. Just give me a chance.
We can do it.
All right. Let's go to analysis, because speaking of put me in, I've got some ideas.
Let's get down to business. It's business. It's business time. I know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's That's right, and that business is, as always, analysis. I'm so excited to be talking about this. Let's talk about style. Why is it style every time someone talks about this movie, and why does it even bloody matter? Go.
I mean, we're talking a lot this week about the Oscars and what categories are going to be on the air. Apparently now they
all
are,
of them.
All of them now. Everybody got very
mad. Academy doesn't have a backbone.
No, they're fucking cowards. They know what they're doing.
The pressure.
Let us do it. I'm tired of asking. It's 2020 Oscars. Give us the gig.
Give the good trash to the hosting gig.
As our much beloved Guillermo del Toro pointed out, cinematography and editing are cinema. They are the very language of this dumb thing that we love. They are not production design. They are not these other things. And I think when you talk about the style of this film, you have to talk about the cinematography and the editing. These whip pans, these Dutch angles Arthur's talked about, these insane push-ins, and all this stuff that is so Raimi, that screams Spider-Man, that screams Evil Dead, that screams Darkman. Mm-hmm. All of these features make this film what it is, and I think it brings you into this very heightened Western world. I think anybody with half a brain cell knows there probably weren't quick draw tournaments like this in the West. If there if there were, they were probably not nearly as gladiatorial. And I think that's necessary to bring you into the world of this film, bring you into that kind of spaghetti Western headspace that I think A Fistful of Dollars or even Yojimbo does so well. Mm-hmm. There's got to be that undertone of silliness. There's got to be that camp to balance out the melodrama, and I think that's what the style provides here.
Yeah. I think so, too. And I think also it does – it heightens action. I think that is more – the movie itself is not – I sort of thought about it. We were having a conversation before that it is sort of like, you know, John Ford's Bloodsport.
Oh, my God. That's incredible.
But it's not quite that.
It's not, but that's really close.
But what makes it feel like there's that much action is just the way the camera moves, even when it's not a fight scene. Even when it's just a moment when they're dragging Cord in and they're asking him, are you fast? And they hurl a glass of water at him. And the way in which it is cut and edited between the one shot of Gene Hackman's Herod and the two shot of Cort, and the way the camera moves between those two cuts, and the way that those two cuts are joined together, it creates a sense of just kinetic, frenetic energy that makes it feel like this movie is punching you in the head all the time.
Yeah.
And so it makes it into an action. It gives it an action movie, again, sort of experience without necessarily having all of the sort of gunplay and explosions that you might expect from an action film.
Well, and this we kind of get to, and this thing came up, you know, going back to Oscars, going back to editing, you know, there's a lot of kind of laughter and stuff about Bohemian Rhapsody taking this editing nomination, because, and they show a clip when the band meets the future manager for the first time, and there's like 30 or 40 cuts, and, you know, it's like, it's cut like an action movie. I mean, very fast, you know, 5 to 10 second ASL average shot length between this. Which is kind of what that is. We got that average shot length, which over time has gotten a lot quicker, which adds to that kind of frenetic element of the film, I think, and that's what we're seeing here as well. It helps pace it a little faster, keeps you moving. You know, if you have that kind of lack of, you know, if you're doing a long takes or anything like that, it really slows things down, and it takes away from that. And that also, I think, adds to the kind of absurdity, you know, fantastic facade of this film.
Well, especially when you have all these fantastical montages that have like these weird, like silhouetted characters that are just superimposed on larger screens or on blank canvases. I think you're absolutely right, Arthur. That's super important.
I was thinking that there's a real similarity between what we see later with Edgar Wright's movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Particularly like Hot Fuzz, where there's a moment where he's just unlocking his door, right?
Well, and I think that goes to show Wright's kind of being generationally closer in our age to Raimi's age, right? He's a guy that got into film watching Sam Raimi films.
Yeah.
And I think you can see that lineage there of that influference.
Yeah, absolutely. Then of course, just all the Dutch angles. And I think that's where camp comes in. Again, it's just because of the imagery. Because, I mean, the ultimate sort of, you know, ur camp Dutch
Lance Henriksen has playing cards on his clothes in this movie. It is camp.
Yes, for sure. But I was going to say the Dutch angles because Batman. Because Bruce Dozier's Batman.
Yeah.
Darkman.
Yeah, Darkman as well. But it's sort of, and again, just the campy camp.
Absolutely.
And so,
the 60s Batman, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's what I mean. Yeah, the Batman TV series.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about gender in the Western, specifically in this film. I want to actually start.
I have a lot to say here.
I think the lady's the most interesting place to end, so I actually want to start with DiCaprio, because he's
He is very much playing DiCaprio at that time,
and
right?
And here's the problem with that. So
he is the hottest thing going in Hollywood in 95.
I've come with a bone to pick on young DiCaprio. I will tread lightly and cautiously, because now that my brother-in-law is a working filmmaker who is a fan of people, I feel like I have to be nice. So
you've
listener,
changed, man.
Consider this the sellout episode. This is this is a film about...
Man, that corporate podcast
had
got
hold
to
on, man.
House of Mouse 2020.
I ain't scared of nobody. This film is a film about the reckoning with the father, right?
Yes.
That is what this film is about. So this is the episode where I become a man. I stop flying off the handle. I stop going off half-cocked. I start swearing a little less, even though I just said cocked. I'm going to try to be diplomatic.
If you're half-cocked, that's not a swear.
It's not? No. Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Huh? Okay. DiCaprio.
Just a little premature.
DiCaprio was running around with this crew right around the time this movie was made that was called the Pussy Posse. And I am not going to enumerate the crimes and members of the Pussy Posse, but suffice to say, you know all of them. All of them. Especially ones whose names might rhyme with Luke Boss and Toby Flafwire.
Which is an odd pool.
It's an incredibly absurd story. But here's the problem with it, right? In this film, Leonardo DiCaprio positions himself as this kind-hearted, sweet, roguish Lothario.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the person he was in real life. Again, I am not going to enumerate the things that were done by these guys. You can go read and form your own opinions, but in my opinion, it's no fucking way for a young man to behave. And I think this is what happens when you get rich and famous when you're 19 years old. It's a very real problem, and I think that's the next thing that we've got to address, especially in Hollywood, as we're talking about making amends. We're dealing with the old guard right now. I think we've got to go down to the middle-aged guys, the elder Gen Xers, and start having a conversation about how those dingleberries were acting when they were coming up. And I think the least Leonardo DiCaprio can do, positioning himself as this Greenpeace savior of fucking humanity, is to publicly acknowledge that he was kind of a shitheel with the ladies when he was a kid.
Yeah.
And I think that's... he seems like a good guy. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say... There's probably a nice young man hiding in there somewhere, and I think that is where you have to start, and I think that's where this film gets really interesting, right, is the way we discuss masculinity, specifically the kid's relationship with Herod, and the kind of fallout of that lack of influence, that refusal of paternity that Herod continuously throws at the kid. I think this is what happens. So I just wanted to point out that the character of the kid is not as cute in real life as it is in this film, and I think that's an important distinction to make.
And I do find also just thematically within the text of the film, it just to be so desperately sad, to be looking so hard for that affirmation. And
it's all he wants.
Even when they finally have their duel, and he hits him. Like, he draws so fast.
Totally wings him.
He totally wings him, and he reaches out his fingers, stretching out for...
Farmer's son.
And does not touch his... It's just the worst. And that's sort of just out-and-out rejection. You are not mine. You are not enough. You are just a farmer. I mean, that there's a way in which it resonates, just to just how cold all of that is. And it definitely makes you hate Hackman's character all the more.
Yeah, he's a bad fucking dude.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about Hackman specifically, or do you think we've kind of got what we need out of Hackman for the purposes of his relationship to the kid?
I think, you know, as far as that whole thing goes, yes.
Maybe we could use Herod to transition to Court.
Well, it's before we get to Court, because Court's going to be related to a couple things I want to get to in a second. I want to talk about Hackman and his, like, relentless pursuit of what he understands to be authenticity. That...
Okay,
DiCaprio's not really my son. He's got farmer's hands.
Ace Hanlon's not a real gunfighter.
Yeah, he's not a real gunfighter, so I've got to punish him.
You're not really poor because you could afford to hire Keith David to kill me.
Right, you're not really a preacher because you're still a killer on the inside.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things. And and not knowing what to do with the lady because he can't tell what she is.
Yeah, he's that real obnoxious old punk guy who keeps telling, saying who's a poser and who's not.
Yeah, everyone's a poser, except for me.
Yeah, I am the only true non-phony. I am the Holden Caulfield you sons of bitches.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And so there's a real, again, sort of postmodernism to his character.
Absolutely.
You know, that I'm the authentic and no one else is authentic, but does so at the exclusion of community, which is interesting. This is where it sort of interplays back with modernism's sort of obsession with individuality as opposed to postmodernism's obsession with communalness.
Yeah, it's this idea that you've set yourself apart as the only truth teller,
mm-hmm.
and when you refuse to think or acknowledge that other people might have a truth that is valid separate from yours, you isolate yourself from everyone around you.
And well, that, and if it challenges you in any way, they're fake. They're not real. They're a sellout.
You
they're
lock up.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah, they're a sellout.
Yeah.
For wanting to do better.
You dirty sellouts. I can't I can't stand them. So yeah, that I mean that's a value of him. Now we want to move on to court if you want. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is a good place, right? Because he is so enraged, Herod is, at court's repentance.
Mm-hmm.
He cannot fathom that this man could be a different person than the man he used to know, and it drives him just up a damn tree. And I think that's super interesting. It's not just that court isn't a killer anymore. It's that Herod is so mad that court, in his eyes, is pretending to not be a killer anymore. I think it's really, really interesting stuff.
And I think there's something very, very Catholic to, you know, maybe, yeah, I would say I think Catholic in the theology.
Do we know that court is a priest?
I would think he's a Catholic
priest. It seems implied.
He's got a mission, and he wears a collar in a way that in the West at that time, you did find it some amongst Presbyterians.
And that's, I knew that. That's why I was wondering.
In terms of Protestantism, but his garb definitely leans much stronger into Catholic.
Okay.
And there's a way in which the film suggests that repentance is not enough.
It's not valid for, like, mortal sins, right?
For him to
especially
say,
not the way Herod sees
it. I'm bad. I did bad. I will stop doing bad. Which would be a very Protestant, I think, sort of formulation. For him, there must also be penance. And he doesn't really earn his redemption. And I think his redemption is absolutely earned, you know, again, sort of in those Protestant Catholic faith and works debates.
Mm-hmm.
It's earned when he finally takes up the martial star. Like, that's the moment at which now you are in the, you know, you're working your way back.
There's a
something.
Really nice parallel between the end of this film and one of my else's that you mentioning it just re-reminded me of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to talk about when we get to the end of the show.
Okay, cool. So, you know, there's that going on. That this movie has a very, again, sort of strongly Catholic, you know, the damned, you know, the quick and the dead. You know, and of course, I mean, that whole line is from the Apostles' Creed, right? That he had descended to the dead, rose again on the third day. He ascended into heaven and will come again to judge the quick and the dead. Also, the sort of that which is a paraphrase of a verse out of 2 Timothy and
now,
King James.
Dustin, you're a guy that knows stuff about the Bible.
Yes.
They're not talking about quick on the draw, are they?
They're not.
What are they talking about there, bud?
The living. The quick are the living.
Okay, that makes sense. All right.
Yeah,
thanks for clarifying.
But obviously, I mean, if you're doing Western stuff and you're thinking of King James Bible stuff,
the living is the quick.
The quick are the living because that's how they stay alive,
yeah.
Right? And so it's got that sort of, you know, like the combativeness of the sports.
It's fun to appropriate the Bible for gunslinging purposes.
Yeah, but
just
also,
ask Samuel L. Jackson.
But it also is very strongly this sort of retribution kind of thing that's working. And here we have Herod's sins finding him out. Right. And so they're seeking after him, and he's finally being pursued. He's come to a point in his life where there is no
retirement. Truth will out. In fact, he is pierced by the light, Dustin.
Yes.
Through and through.
He is pierced by I mean, that metaphor is brilliant there.
It's fucking good, right?
Despite the fact of being cheese balls,
you're
all
so,
get out.
You're so wrong.
It works.
It's extraordinarily cheese ball.
I'm with you, Arthur. Do we want to go ahead and segue to the lady then, since we've kind of gotten through? Or do we have anything else we want to say about court and his quest for Red Dead Redemption 2.
Red Dead Redemption 2. I don't think I want to say anything more at this point.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and talk about the lady. Now, I've kind of already planted the seed of I love the vulnerability, right? I like
yes.
the performance of badassery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there might be a inclination from some viewers to say, well, why couldn't they just let her be a real gunslinger like Clint Eastwood? Why'd she have to be vulnerable?
Mm-hmm.
Clint Eastwood should be vulnerable.
Yes.
I think all the characters in this movie are vulnerable. The kid is super vulnerable.
Yes.
Court
yeah.
is super vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I think letting our unnamed gunslinger be vulnerable is such an important thing for us to do in this film. And I think audiences in 1995 were more primed to be ready for that idea because it was Sharon Stone and not a man playing this character. But I think we need the vulnerable version of this character. I think we're starting to get it a little bit. I know I've been beating the drum for Punisher season 2 a little bit, but I think that season of television kind of touches on that. Also been beating the drum for The Expanse really hard lately. I think that show also does a little bit of that sensitive, badass protagonist type.
Well, even John Wick.
Yeah, for sure.
Something very wrong with Wick in that movie.
I mean, there's plenty of scenes of Keanu like on the verge of tears, in a really kind of powerful
way. Dealing with all this violence.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's a way in which Ellen has to work herself up to do what is necessary.
She's nervous.
That Herod must be stopped. That creepo, pervo, rapey chomo guy must be stopped.
That shit was gross.
You know, it was so gross. You know, she grows up, she's going to be a good and, oh my gosh, just heebie-jeebies. But that she's got to sort of work herself up to that place where she goes ahead and kills these people and again, she wants to leave. She wants to abandon it because, you know, it's hard to confront that sort of evil with truth, that there's a real challenge there.
Well, we've talked about that a lot throughout this podcast, right? Sometimes the good guy has to forget how to be a good guy and make it all go away with a bottle of whiskey so they can embrace the monster, so they can become the beast.
Do the chaos magic.
Frankenstein teen, unleash the beast.
And, you know, as I was thinking about that, this film feels weirdly prescient. What
I was Arthur's reaction to Unleash the Beast, Frankenstein teen. It's from my brother and me. Sorry, guys.
That's fine. There's something.
Become the monster. Shit, I can't remember. It's not important. There's this moment. I'm sorry.
There's this moment that we're in right now. You know that Gene Hackman's character is a bad guy who has perpetrated bad things all along and is fully orchestrating this sort of set of events. I mean, I cannot but think about Hackman's character as a film director and that,
I know.
I mean, that there's a really strong sort of Me Too kind of thing that's going on here.
Yeah,
right?
Man.
And that this guy's got to be brought to justice. I mean, that
the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah, Herod is Harvey Weinstein. I mean, were they doing that on purpose when they made the film?
No,
probably
absolutely
not.
But the villainy is out in the open, and it must be curtailed.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And then but that's where Court's character becomes very, very interesting. That, again, repentance itself is not enough. That there is a way out of redemption, that the movie does begin to suggest something like that, which has been an ongoing conversation, that filmmakers and actors have behaved badly. And that they can recognize that and they can swear off bad behavior.
And you know what they can do? They can listen to the people who are laying out the judgment and what they have to say about what they should be doing.
Yes.
And it is listening to Ellen, the lady, saying the law has come back to town. And Ellen knows that it can't be her.
Right.
That's not what her gig is. Her gig is to go to the lawless places. Court's new role in life is to hold the law. He thought it was to keep the faith, but it is to hold the wolf at the gate.
Right.
Which I think is a really amazing turn at the end of the film.
And so, yeah, I mean, really the only place in which they can sort of survive after this point is to police the same kind of behavior that they were once guilty of, that they've got to be the first people who say, no, you can't do that, you know, anymore. That's how they can find a way to be allies in a thing that is so ugly like this. And lastly, just in terms of metaphors, I mean, the clock itself. I mean, the clock ticks and time's up. I mean, it's just there, right?
And then you just blow it all open.
Yeah, and so I do feel like there's a certain timeliness to this. And Sharon Stone as an actress doing this kind of work, obviously.
It's so cool.
Much exploited, you know. And not exploited, but, you know, because, I mean, there's a way in which, you know, I think she feels very liberated in doing what she has done. You know, I mean, Basic Instinct, she's naked a lot, right?
She's naked a little bit in this movie.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. But I think especially this film in the echo of Basic Instinct is a very, it feels like a very powerful film for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big part of why it works. I mean, she's a big part of why it ever existed, as we talked about. Well, this feels like a good stopping point, yeah?
Yeah, I feel good.
All right, let's bring the train in the station, shall
so
we?
So let's render a verdict. Shelf or trash, else or instead. I go to you first. Arthur, shelf or trash, else or instead.
Shelf.
Yes!
Easily.
Ooh, got him.
Easily. I don't care how hard you want to be on your movies this year. This is going on the shelf.
Got that big fish.
And with it, if you want some more... Oh, Sam Raimi. Forgot his name for 10 seconds. if you want some more Sam Raimi, if you want to see his Coen Brothers movie, check out A Simple Plan.
Good movie.
Which is a movie I was like, 10 minutes in, I'm like, oh, this is okay. 20 minutes in, I'm like, what is happening? 30 minutes in, I was hooked. And
that movie, it's a gift.
Gem.
It just keeps giving.
It does. It is incredibly well structured too. So definitely check out that.
Billy Bob Thornton is so incredible in that movie.
Dustin mentioned it earlier, and I didn't think about it, but yeah, it's the perfect one, and it is Hot Fuzz. I think of that Cornetto trilogy, Hot Fuzz is the one they'll go with it. And then finally, for more of that kind of editing and lending that self to the narrative. Kind of what Wright is playing with as well, and that's Guy Ritchie, and I think you watch Snatch, and even Rock and Rolla would be a couple of films to pair with this one.
That's a film we're going to do on the show.
Oh, yeah, we need to do that
long.
One. Yeah. A real Rock and Rolla. So those are my else's with Quick and the Dead.
I like it very much. What do you say, Mr. Dalton Stewart? Shelf or trash, else or instead?
Surprising no one, I am shelving this one. This is a big episode. I've decided it, set an intention, and that's what this intention is. This is a big episode. This is a big movie. It's going on the shelf. It is important to Westerns. It is important to the 90s. It is important to me. What should you watch with it? You got to get more young Kurt Russell doing some gunplay, doing a real action movie. L.A. Confidential.
Russell Crowe?
I said Kurt Russell, didn't I? I do that all the time. Russell Crowe. You got to get Russell Crowe in L.A. Confidential with his countryman fellow Aussie Guy Pearce, which is just fun.
Yes.
You want some more Bad Hackman? You want that Dirty Boy? You got to go watch Royal Tenenbaums. I know I'm not much of a Wes Anderson guy. I know I don't really go to bat for him much on this show. I think he's a little overrated. But I love the Royal Tenenbaums, and I think it's probably Gene Hackman's like finest hour as an actor. And I think the kind of roles he, you know, that Popeye Doyle and The French Connection in the 70s took him to Herod in the 90s, and I think these films he's doing in the mid-90s take him to... Royal Tenenbaums in the late 90s, early 2000s. Love that film very, very much, and I think it's a great Hackman film. I am unfortunately not particularly versed on Sharon Stone. It's a real blind spot for me, unfortunately. I can't recommend another thing to watch her in. So I say you check out Charlize Theron, one of our picks for The New Lady, and you go watch Fury Road, which has that moment, Dustin, at the end of the movie. The redemption for Max is not helping them get back to Gastown or whatever it's called and retake it. It is him making sure that Furiosa is placed in charge of the town before he leaves. It's not just getting the convoy back. He has to see the deed done and cross them to the finish line, and he's got to get them back to the promised land before he can ride off into the sunset. And I think it's very similar to the scene we get at the end of The Quick and the Dead between Court and Ellen.
Absolutely, absolutely. Excellent, excellent. So I am going to say... I'm not going to say buy it. I'm going to say trash. I mean, I think it's good. It's worth a stream, but I don't think it's worth owning. And, you know, again, just it's fun, but it's lesser Raimi, and it's lesser 90s Western, honestly. So I'm afraid I'm in the minority there, but I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it's definitely fun.
We all fall short of Corden occasionally.
That's what Court would say, right? but I would say that maybe last year's Revenge, the Belgian/American revenge thriller.
Yes, please.
Rape revenge film would be an interesting also watch.
Yeah,
and then
it would.
I'm going to recommend a 15-minute experimental film called She Puppet from Peggy Awash that came out. Oh, gosh, I had a year for it at one point. Let's see if I can pull it up very quickly just to give you an idea of how old it is. 2001. But it is using the Laura Croft Tomb Raider character. It's all sort of appropriated footage from that and working with issues of feminism. And she plays basically a triad of three different kinds of characters throughout with the Laura Croft character. It's a pretty brilliant sort of meditation on the way women are used
very
in
good.
Cinema. So, yeah. She Puppet, Peggy Awash, if you can find it.
There's a... oh, my gosh, I can't think of her name. Anita Sarkeesian, who was the unfortunately the subject of much bullshit during the biggest battles of Gamergate, did a similar thing with this online show, Feminist Frequency, kind of discussing... the role of women in video games.
Okay.
If you want more reading like that, I think that'd be a great
I'll bet you that up. Movie came up in that conversation, too.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. So, anyway, those are my recommends. There you go, dear listener. That's what happens just then, and I guess your syllabus just got longer. So we are done with our anti-trash and trash Western marathon.
No, not quite.
We got one more.
Nay, but
one more, sir.
Oh, okay.
Whoa.
I'll do one more.
Look, we didn't talk nearly enough about Spotted Horse Who Cannot Be Killed by Bullets.
We did not.
Well, we're going to spend all of next episode talking about all that gross shit we've seen in Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
We're finally doing a Western about the genocide of the native peoples of this country. We spent a long time discussing what movie we were going to do, because it turns out there are not that many.
There aren't a lot.
It's fucked up.
Yep.
We almost did Geronimo, but it's a little bit harder to find, because we really wanted that big West Studi starring performance, but it's just too hard to find. So we're going with Hostiles, still getting our West Studi, but it comes with a side of Christian Bale and Rosamund Pike.
And we're going real modern. This is only a couple years old, so we're kind of really getting into this kind of more modern cycle of the Western as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, going to have a little different flavor. I know we did Ballad of Buster Scruggs, but that I think this will be a little different than that.
Yeah, that's
approach
kind of
to the Western.
That's that anthology tone hopper thing. This feels very much in the mode that Westerns are made in now. Feels in the lineage
like
of
slow
that,
West, and
the slow West, but even also like an Open Range a little
yeah.
bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that bleak Western thing going for it too. I mean, we almost also did Barrymore at Wounded Knee. So it's got that kind of washed out Western color palette in some interesting ways. So I think it'll be a really fun one. I'm a little sad we didn't get to 310 to Yuma, but that's okay. I'm excited to do Hostiles.
We'll live to gunfight another day.
That we shall.
So there you go, dear listener. You keep watching. We'll keep talking, and we'll see you all next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Good Trash Genre Cast. Good Trash Genre Cast is a product of Good Trash Media. For info on everything Good Trash and more shows just like this, head on over to goodtrashmedia.com. Our intro and outro music are made by friend of the show Aaron Rodgers. You can find more of his stuff nowhere because he is staying off the web. Be safe.